Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, sponsoring a lung cancer and smoking cessation symposium on Friday, September 22nd, and a pharmacy forum on Saturday, September 23rd. Agendas, registration, and more information online at neahec.org/conferences.
I've been bitten by a chigger.
I've had a chigger bite, too.
We've all been bitten by chiggers.
And there's nothing we can do.
I got you. Okay, I see what you're doing.
And it's that bad.
Perfect. I don't intend to get better. I don't intend.
Yeah.
I'm getting better. Yep. Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Chiggers in Purgatory show, and this gives you some idea of how my week went. I, in fact, have blundered into a rather impressive number of chiggers, and thanks to Shelley for bailing me out on this one.
It was just annoying watching you dig and scratch.
I was up against the door frame, just kind of going at it like a bear trying to scratch a spot, and it got bad. So she had mercy on me. We'll talk more about that in a minute. And I got to
thinking, we have to?
Well, this my only point is, and I'll just make this point, and we'll move on.
I bet you will.
The Hades, purgatory, the place where people go, where bad people go, it's got fire. But the thing is, sometimes fire is pleasant. It's warm, it's romantic, and so forth.
It's usually not up to your neck.
True. On the other hand, chiggers are never romantic. They are never pleasant in any way. So I figured, okay, if I were in charge of purgatory, we put the fires out and we just cover the place with chiggers. Because there were some times earlier in the week at night when I was thinking, well, this is pretty bad.
Sounds like you're kind of wimpy. Because chiggers just are tiny. They're tiny, tiny, tiny.
They are
little
very
red
small
dots.
Absolutely.
I can't believe that you would let that bother you so bad.
Thanks to our listeners of True Talk Internet Radio and here to disagree with me on a regular basis from the University of Kentucky, the Physician Assistant Program, Assistant Professor Shelley Irving. Hi, Shelley.
Hello.
And as always, the Interim Executive Director of Networking and Infrastructure, the man who knows technology like the back of his hand, to tell you how to use the front of your hand to access Health Matters, Rick Phillips. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Tony. We'd rather you use your ears to listen to Health Matters, but hey, do whatever you got to do. Listen to the show again and again and again. Go to WMKY.org. That's right, Morehead State Public Radio's website. You got to find your way through the menus. You'll have to find Health Matters. You know, there's other shows there, Front Page, all the other just shows you'll see. Listen to them if you want, but find your way to Health Matters. Listen to the audio. Sign up for the podcast. Have Health Matters delivered to your device whenever they become available, which is about 4 days after they air the first time on Saturday morning, right? So sometime around Tuesday, they'll show up on your podcast device, and then you'll be able to listen to us in all of our glory.
It sort of reminds me of Amazon Prime. I mean, you've got free delivery in 4 days.
Scheduled delivery.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Free scheduled delivery.
And it's free.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, but Amazon Prime is only free for shipping.
Oh, that's a good point.
So, you do have to.
Even better than
even
Amazon
if you
Prime.
Decide you want to pick that 60-inch TV screen, they do send you a bill for the screen. So, anyway, audio of the show is WMKY.org. After that, it's time to interact with Health Matters. Jump over to Facebook, facebook.com/HMRadioshow. There you'll find our fan page. Leave us some feedback. Put in a show suggestion. Just let us know what you want to hear or what you want to know more about. There's posts there from the relevant current news items. There's research items. Sometimes there's just funny stuff. Sometimes there's serious stuff. The thing is, you won't know what's at facebook.com/HMRadioshow until you visit the site. So we would encourage you, interact with Health Matters. Join the fun. You'd be amazed at what you can suggest that Tony will actually do on the show. It's pretty phenomenal. So again, facebook.com/HMRadioshow.
Our sponsor for the show, no surprise here. Chiggers, there will be chiggers in purgatory. Our fun facts about chiggers, I've actually got 15. I found a review of chiggers, and that was hard. I will tell you, practicing medicine for many years, went to a reasonably good medical school, but I never learned anything in class about chiggers. They are called trombiculids. How about that? Trombiculid mites.
That sounds like a Greek god.
The Greek god of itching. Trombiculid mites, widespread ectoparasites. They're parasites, but they're only parasites of the skin. More than 50 species have been recorded attacking humans. And that right there is enough to me that we should banish them from the planet. Fun fact number two, humans are accidental hosts. Most likely, the trombiculids attack and feed on the first available animal. They can have a preference for one particular host. And there are. I was called out by name, I will point out, by these trombiculids. I could hear them calling my name down from the grass tops, and they were very happy when I walked by. Number three, the larvae attack humans. They know almost nothing about the adults of most of this particular species. They climb onto low vegetation. They aggregate into clusters. Human bites occur mainly in the exposed areas and at site where clothing constricts. They form mite islands with large numbers living close together, separated by bare spots with no mites in them. So they're not evenly distributed, mostly in moist soil-covered vegetation like grassy and weedy areas, most active, unfortunately for me, late summer and fall. Number five, they cut through the skin, and then their saliva dissolves the epidermis, creating a stylosome. This stylosome allows them to reach down to the lower layers of the skin where they can obtain nutrients. That is our first five fun facts about chiggers. And we have, thanks to Jen at the Free Clinic, and Jen, I appreciate your help. We have the chigger song. We will tell you. I know.
Thanks,
Jen. We will tell you about the treatment of chiggers. So here's the song. I've been bitten by a chigger.
I've had a chigger bite, too.
We've all been bitten by chiggers.
And there's nothing we can do. That's right. There is no treatment for chiggers. We'll talk to you more about the irritation of chiggers.
And us singing about chiggers. That is an extreme irritation.
In our second fractional portion. First thing up, we have talked a lot about having a CAT scan for lung cancer. Remember, if you or someone you love is age 55 to 75, a 30-pack year, smoked a pack a day for 30 years, and has quit less than 15 years ago, you may be eligible for lung cancer screening. So if you are a smoker, 55 to 75 years old, they will extend it up a little bit depending on your insurance plan. It would be a free service for Medicare, Medicaid, and the Affordable Care Act insurances. Talk to your doctor about this important service. But let's say that you're not going to get a CAT scan. You may not have a proper insurance plan. You may have you may not be age eligible. What about a dog scan if you can't have a CAT scan? July 24th, they said after appropriate training, they exposed a 3-year-old crossbreed Labrador Retriever and a pit bull. They exposed the dog to 390 samples of exhaled gas. That is, you breathe into a tube or a cup or something, and they have the dog sniff your breath. 113 individuals. And here's where this experiment goes wrong. There were 85 patients with lung cancer and 28 which didn't have lung cancer. 11 had no lung cancer and 17 were actually completely healthy. A total of 785 samples. So a lot of different samples, but most of the people who gave the samples had lung cancer. And that's not the way it's going to be in real life. The dog recognized the lung cancer. And it was really pretty good. This dog picked up lung cancer about 95% of the cases that had it. And of the ones who didn't have it, he only saw 2% of those. He only barked or whatever the dog did 2% of the time if you didn't have it. Now, that's pretty darn good. It would be as good as a CAT scan. Again, if the problem being that that was done in a very select population with a very high levels of lung cancer. Now, when you look at this, what we call sensitivity specificity, this is what we the way we measure tests, 95% sensitive and 98% specific, that's good. That should apply. If this were a machine, you'd say, well, it's ready to go. We could put it into any population, and it would pick more or less lung cancers depending on the rate of lung cancer in the population. But it's not a machine. It's a dog. It's a Labrador Retriever crossed with a pit bull. And if it doesn't see lung cancer for several hundred samples, I worry the dog's going to get distracted because I know what Labradors do. And that's my problem with this thing. Conclusions, the study shows a well-trained dog can detect lung cancer and exhale gas samples with extremely high accuracy. It is an interesting idea. But, you know, Rick, I mean, we've had the dogs that, you know, the seizure dogs, they do seem to actually work. Mm-hmm. We've had dogs that sniff out different types of cancer before and other diseases.
Well, and then there's, you know, dogs that are designed for, you know, more social type problems, you know. You even have some now that actually can sense diabetes, right? So when you're insulin, you need your insulin. I mean, there's all kinds of service type dogs.
I think it's this is a good idea. There have been other animals that have been looked at that seem to have an extremely good sensitivity to smell. I thought, you know, we are just too loving of machines. In other parts of the world, we are using these things. Everything from diagnosing tuberculosis, they can smell the sputum. There's like a giant rat that smells the sputum and can diagnose tuberculosis. But we're using now, we call it polymerase chain reaction, PCR tests and other tests to very expensive tests, and we could just get a rat, a trained rat, and do it. But I think the problem is, like I said, the training and the fatigue. We in the United States, we cannot stand it if it's not standardized. That's why we don't like soccer. We like football. Football, six referees, a clock, instant replay, all those things. We're going to get this call right. Soccer, one guy in the middle of the field. He obviously missed the call. Everybody's booing and throwing stuff. That's a part of the soccer. That's why everybody loves soccer. Because any team can upset
another. Let me rephrase. Not everybody loves soccer. Don't generalize. Don't lump me into your generalizations.
Everybody outside the U.S. loves it. But in the U.S., it's not precise. It's not accurate. We don't have instant replay. None of these things work. We got to have instant replay.
It's just too slow scoring.
Yeah, and I think if I came in and I said, I'm sorry, the Labrador dog says you have cancer, you're going to say, can't we get a machine?
No, I'm not. No, I'm not going to.
You're going to trust the Labrador?
Well, I mean, I think I might want to see his papers. I want to see you trained him.
It's not even a purebred Labrador. I should have mentioned that.
You know, I think, you know, there's some – it's an interesting concept, right? I mean, because you know, the dogs do require training, right? So somebody has to train them. And there has to be
– 3 years. This dog was trained for 3 years, as a matter of fact.
And you know, I don't know. It is certainly
– Hey, while you're thinking – his name is Blatt. They call the dog Blatt.
Well, what's
Blatt
that?
Says you have cancer.
What language was that created in?
I think he's Spanish.
So what does that translate
Spanish.
To?
Blatt? I don't know. Maybe that's the sound that it makes when he's, I don't know.
Never mind. Yeah, don't go there. I don't think everybody would just in general shoot this down and say, I want technology. I do think there is something to be said when you're talking about a life and death diagnosis, right? When you're talking about something like lung cancer, I think it's...
It's tough, isn't it? Because you say, are you sure I've got cancer? Well, the dogs seem pretty positive.
Yeah. I mean, you know, most of the time when you hear about a dog scan, it's in some movie and it's a reference to a joke.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean,
it might take some, there might be some stigma associated with a dog scan.
But, let me ask you, what if you met the dog?
But hey.
You said, oh, here's the dog. You see, I mean, look at that dog. Do you think he would lie to you?
But let's be honest, Tony. We've got a pet scan. Right? We've got a cat scan and a pet scan.
Yeah, I'm more of a cat person, so I would go for the cat scan.
But you know the dog scan does have a lot less radiation.
I'm still going to trust the cat.
The cat scan. Man, I would never trust a cat. If we're going to put it in that race, I would sooner trust a lab than a cat. You've got to trust us. We're going to come back with our second fractional portion. But you're listening to Health Matters on Moorhead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, sponsoring a lung cancer and smoking cessation symposium on Friday, September 22nd at the Center for Health Education and Research in Moorhead, and a fall pharmacy forum on Saturday, September 23rd at Carter Cave State Resort Park. Continuing education credits are available. Agendas, registration, and more information online at neahec.org/conferences.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Shelley Irving.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Chiggers in Purgatory show.
Do we have to sing that again?
Yes.
Please, because
it's
not make us do that.
Artistically, I think we do it.
Jen better be listening.
This is not my song.
Shelley
and I are like slave labor here.
Yeah, I know.
We're being told to do this.
As a matter of fact,
I surprised them
with this. I didn't even tell them what's going to happen. Our sponsor, Chiggers, there will be Chiggers in Purgatory. And again, we're going through our fun facts about Chiggers because there aren't many facts about Chiggers. That, to me, is the interesting thing. All right, we're up to fun fact number 6. Their feeding times last from 3 hours to 2 days. If they simply were staying on you, they would stay for up to 2 days. Now, you're not going to allow that because by 2 days, you're going to be itching your eyeballs out. But still, they could stay on you 2 days. During this time, they remain on the skin surface. They do not burrow under your skin. Jen, you were right on that as well. They have, Asian chiggers carry a disease called scrub typhus, or, do you remember this disease? One of my favorite diseases, Tsutsugamushi disease. Tsutsuga is disease and mushi is mite. So we in the U.S. call it Tsutsugamushi disease, meaning disease mite disease. This is why we can't allow Japan to get ahead of us in medical research, because we can't have Japanese names on our diseases because it doesn't make any sense. It's carried by an Asian chigger. Don't worry. Calm down. Please remain seated. You, in fact, cannot get Tsutsugamushi by American chiggers. They do have some decency. There are no known diseases carried by U.S. chiggers. And again, they're the larva, so they haven't had a chance to bite anything else before they bite you, so they don't have any germs from other animals. There is, fun fact number 8, a disease called trombiculiasis, trombiculosis, or just simply chigger dermatitis. That's when they bite you a lot and you get a very, very strong allergic reaction. Trombiculars are found, fun fact number 9, in grassy high vegetation with warm soil, high humidity, clusters of chiggers, wait at elevated points like the end of a grass stalk until a human passes by. And then, just like paratroopers, they fling themselves on you in large numbers, sometimes dozens, sometimes hundreds. And although the rate of people being bitten is very high, some people are preferred by chiggers, namely the ones on this side of the studio. Oh, man, I tell you what, I have found my homies. Others remain unmolested, even in highly infested areas. I did not hear a single chigger calling out for Rick. I'll just point that out.
Good.
Fun fact number 10, the bites are initially painless. The only sign of exposure is a severe itching, Rick, a severe itching. The bumps appear at the bites a few hours after exposure. They form pustules, yes they do, and scabs. The itching is intense, especially at night, Rick. Although the chigger is not present, the discomfort may persist for 2 or 3 weeks, Rick. Itching improves in a week. So, I've been bitten by a chigger.
I've had a chigger bite, too.
We've all been bitten by chiggers.
And there's nothing we can do. There is no treatment for chigger bites, and we'll tell you more about chiggers in our third and final fractional portion.
I have learned in my lifetime, too, there is no cure for you. You have made us do some of the craziest stuff on this show.
And by the way, thanks to Jen for giving me the song at the free clinic.
Yeah,
Jen,
thank
I love
you,
it.
Jen.
And I've managed to irritate Rick.
Maybe you should stay indoors more.
Yeah.
Embrace the computer.
Okay. Well, let me tell you, I told a couple of people about it. And actually, the staff that I work with, they said that they had some chigger bites. And they went to a pharmacist and they said you should get a Nix shampoo, which is a lice shampoo. And then they said also take a quarter or half a cup of bleach in the bath water and take a bleach bath. There's really absolutely no evidence at all that any of that works. But it was odd. That was the recommendation. If it makes you feel better, fine, but that's what you're trying to do. But it doesn't have any scientific basis whatsoever. All right, this was from the British Medical Journal, published July 26. I'll just read the first sentence. With little evidence that failing to complete a complete prescribed antibiotic course contributes to antibiotic resistance, it's time for policymakers, educators, and doctors to drop this message. Remember, you have to take all the antibiotics even after you feel good. It turns out that is the wrong thing to do.
Well, good.
And we're done. No, we thought that if you stop short, you would sort of expose the germs to a little bit of antibiotic, and they would learn how to deal with it in some way. And this was, again, this was all the way back to when Alexander Fleming discovered penicillin. He said, if you use penicillin, use enough, because he was very worried about stopping early. Now, with penicillin and with subsequent antibiotics, we would try a course of the antibiotics, a 7-day course, a 10-day course, a 2-week course. And it worked for the most part. And we would say, all right, you must take them that duration. Now, the problem was we had the idea of resistance wrong. We thought that if you showed a little bit of antibiotic and then you let the germs recover, they would be resistant. But the things that make germs resistant are actually mutations. So it turns out the more germs you kill that are sensitive to the antibiotic, the more likely resistant germs will grow. So the longer you take an antibiotic, the more likely you are to develop resistance, not the shorter. Now, there are some things like tuberculosis, where there is so much of a burden of TB germ and it's so hard to kill that you've got to finish the course. Absolutely got to. But there are other signs that for most of the things we treat with antibiotics, in fact, those longer courses are more likely to develop resistance than the shorter courses. And we've talked so much about the biome. What you want to do is to get in, kill the bad germs, and get out. You do not want to continue the antibiotics day after day, week after week, until you have only resistant germs left on your body. That is not a healthy state for you. He mentions in his editorial, he says, many bacterial species live harmlessly in the gut, on our skin, and our mucous membranes. They can also cause disease as what we call opportunistic pathogens, given the chance they may invade. Resistant selection, if they're sitting there and the only ones that are left after your weeks of antibiotics, in fact, are resistant to the antibiotic, then you've got a problem. Now, as he says at the end of this, he says, historically, antibiotic courses were set by precedent. Whatever worked before, we'll keep doing it. We were worried about undertreatment. We weren't thinking about overuse. And we've actually dropped our durations for some things. For instance, a bladder infection, we've dropped our course for that. We can also have shorter periods for pneumonia. There are some things where it didn't work, it turns out. They mentioned specifically ear problems, otitis media, an ear infection in children under 2 years old. 5 days treatment has a lower cure rate than 10 days, so we still recommend that. But for most of the things we treat, we pick the time course just based on one trial that tried one time course. We didn't test to see whether we could get by with shorter durations. So now we've got to go back and rethink how we do the antibiotics. This is going to take a while. Our message from Health Matters is, one, don't try this at home. Don't try this on your antibiotic. Talk to your doctor and see what they say. Now, this is going to be news. This just came out July 26th, and it suggests we've got to change everything. It's going to take a while to do this. We don't have the research to do it scientifically, but you need to talk with your doctor. Now, if you're in the hospital, we'll watch your temperature. We'll watch your blood test. We'll figure out when the germ's on the run, and we can stop it then. And that's the way we usually do it. But for a home course of antibiotics, for an outpatient course of antibiotics, we're going to have to make some educated guesses to do this, and we don't want you to do this on your own because some of these things you've got to take the full course still. But for many infections, it turns out, we could shorten the antibiotics, save you some money, and also lower your chance of developing resistance.
Well, and also reduce side effects, adverse effects, or drug-drug interactions.
This is kind of exciting, I got to say.
You find this exciting?
I do, because it's going to change everything going forward. You know, this is a class of medicines that we've overused, and now we're starting to think about it. The other thing is, you know, we talked about the biome. We talked about the normal germs, and before we didn't care about the normal germs. You take 2 weeks of antibiotics, whatever happens to them, they're on their own, and we're going to make sure that everything is dead. And now we're saying, well, everything is dead is not a very healthy state for you. You need those germs.
Yeah, we just don't know exactly which ones they are.
Right. So it means we got a lot of work to do, but now we can start changing our approach. At least we're not just turning a blind eye to the thing anymore. Now
right.
We start thinking about it. Mm-hmm. I like it. Speaking of changes.
Uh-oh.
This was actually an American Medical Association press release. About half of patients will have skin of color by 2050. Half of our patients will have skin of color by 2050. Well, you think, okay, well, that means we're becoming more diverse as a society.
Right.
But no big deal. But this was written by a dermatologist. And he said, we're in trouble. Dermatologists and primary physicians who refer to them will be faced with skin diseases that happen more frequently in patients of color. And we don't know anything about that. I grew up, in medical school.
But what date did you cite? Refresh my memory. What date?
2050.
So we've got, 32 years to learn?
It's not like they're going to suddenly.
Are the dermatologists not going to evolve?
Hang on a second. It's not like they're going
to. Are they woolly mammoths and it's snowing? I mean, what's the deal here?
Let me know when you're finished. Just
I'm not finished.
Okay, go ahead.
Come on, really? 32 years? I mean, technology in 32 years, we can't even fathom what that's going to be. You may have your own personal, you know, sun protectant that you wear like a coat that completely protects you. We don't know. 32 years? Look what's happened in the last 32 years.
Unfortunately, I got linked up with you.
I mean, here's the thing. Well, that was only half of those 32 years. And I'm sorry, in 32 years, we haven't been able to fix your chigger problem.
Now, that was below the belt. That mostly
literally,
below the belt.
Yeah. Literally. No, but I'm just saying, is this really a little bit short-sighted? Right. I mean, come on, 32
okay,
years.
But he used that number to, again, that's when we hit half the patients. What I'm saying is, you know, we, dermatology, this is weird. Dermatology is a white person's disease, specialty.
Okay, well, they're going to have to adapt.
Yes.
That's, and they have 32 years to do it.
But it's not like, poof, we got a bunch of people with dark skin in 50 years, by 2050, 32 years from now. What I'm saying is, right now, we have, the specialty was really looking, I mean, when you talk about sun protection, what do we talk about? Do we say, all right, if your skin is lighter than this color, you need to avoid the sun, you need to use, no, we just
maybe
tell
we
everybody.
Should just, maybe we should just tell everybody to avoid the sun.
Right, but there are people who don't need to. You see what I'm saying? People, because of their skin color, are at lower risk for certain things. And we just don't, we don't know what their risk is. Should they avoid the sun? We don't know. And that's the frustrating thing.
Should they eat vitamins? We don't know. I don't know, Tony. I mean, 32 years. Does that not, don't you find that just a little bit comical?
Okay.
I mean,
for
I know
our
this is
radio
supposed to be
fans,
a fun
I'm
show.
Going to go ahead and read the rest of this.
can we get to the next 5 years, not the last 27 years?
Rick, I'm not trying to take a statue down here. I just want to read this report.
And you think I would be offended taking statues down?
I don't know. You got me with the chigger thing, and I thought, okay, the gloves are off, buddy.
Do you think that would bother me? What if it's your statue?
Here we go. There is little known about cutaneous disease and skin cancer risk in patients with skin of color. While the risk for skin cancer is well characterized, for instance, they mention specifically in organ transplant recipients, you suppress their immune system, and we know exactly what's going to happen to them. We don't know, for a non-white organ transplant recipient, what to do. So in certain circumstances, this is already a problem, our lack of knowledge. Malignant melanoma accounts for 75% of all skin cancer deaths, is potentially curable if diagnosed earlier. While it is rare among black patients, it is also associated with a worse prognosis. And there are deeper tumors, more advanced stages of disease. So it is certainly not innocuous. So they mentioned, people with darker skin types are under the myth that they don't get skin cancer. They do. They have more problems also with the after effects of things like psoriasis and also vitiligo. That's where your skin gets part of its white and then part of its dark. Because in many parts of the world, those diseases are mistaken for leprosy or some other serious infectious condition, and they are shunned. I got to say, those psoriasis commercials on TV, you know, where they try to make psoriasis patients into victims and see me and so forth. Mm-hmm. I've been unsympathetic to them. But worldwide, a condition like psoriasis or vitiligo, and again, this is Michael Jackson, you know, had the, for whatever reason, had vitiligo, mm-hmm. had bleaching of his skin. That could be a real serious problem in some parts of the world. So we've got to, I think we've got to change our approach. And Rick says, we're fine. He's apparently going to invent something that will take care of people's skin.
I like my chances. 32 years, I like my chances. The other thing, too, is if I'm unsuccessful, I'm out. I don't know that I'll be here in 32 years. My genetic code may not get me to that age. So this is going to be the dermatologist got to suffer through this one without me.
So good luck. Well, we're going to wish good luck to the dermatologists of the world because apparently they're not going to have any technical support in 2050. Of course, it'll... I don't know. I can't even trade insults with you. I just say, guys, just look at Rick, listen to Rick, and that's the deepest insult I can give you.
Well, if you made me sing, that's not even fair. You made me sing.
You got a little grouchy on this. I think we got a little testiness
you think,
coming
you
from
think the. Shelly's like sitting where she's sitting between us.
See, Rick and right now we're arguing across here, and Shelly's just got her head down.
3 years ago, we'd have just smacked each other and called it a day.
Well, that's when the silly string comes out, and then the police get called. And apparently, people don't like restraining orders on a radio show. I don't understand it.
Well, the studio's only so big.
And you're right in the middle. Thank you very much. Okay, let's move on to something. Let's see if I can find something.
Let's get something this decade.
Yeah, all right. So this one is actually, this was August 14th. It was in Pediatrics. And All right. It was from Isabelle Claudet, and I will not even tell you where she's from because it's a bunch of French words. It is in Toulouse, France. That's all I know. And we were talking about the accidental cannabis intoxication. Accidental, you would say, marijuana intoxication among toddlers. They found that it was rising at an alarming rate, and it is a real public health issue. They did a national retrospective multicenter study of children younger than six with confirmed marijuana intoxication admitted to pediatric emergency rooms from 2004 to 2014. 235 children admitted to 24 different emergency rooms, 80% of the national pediatric emergency rooms across the country. Between 2004 and 2014, that 10-year period, admissions to emergency room departments for inadvertent marijuana intoxication rose by 133% and calls to Poison Control Center up by 312%. In the U.S., our rates were up by 147% between 2000 and 2013. A little bit of a different period, but clearly on the rise. The proportion of severe cases went from 3 cases, or 7%, in 2004 to 37 cases, or 19%, in 2014. By severe cases, the child was admitted in a coma. Mean age, the average age, 1.5 years. 1.5 years old. Mm-mm-mm. Come into the emergency room. There were no fatal cases, incidence of coma, 2 of the 46 cases, up to 31 of 183. Child, 1.5 years coming in a coma. This is what they said, and this is why this got my attention. I don't take care of kids, so this is a sad thing. I can cluck my tongue about it, and I can look over it, but this is a sad thing. But they said, as pediatric marijuana intoxication has become so prevalent, if you have a child without a fever who comes in comatose, you should be looking for this.
Wow.
And it's the baked products. I mean, that's where it's coming from. You have baked goods with marijuana, and these things are, they're not in child-proof packages or anything. Mm-hmm. They're sitting on the counter.
Right.
They get started, and then they go into a coma.
Mm-mm-mm.
Okay.
And that's how you're going to end a segment? You're going to end a segment like that.
Infants in a coma. What do you think comes after that that makes you...
I think we all are going to need a break.
Probably so. You should take a break, too. You've been listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio. We're going to get our act together, and people are going to either get in line or get out.
I'll be nice.
Okay.
Shelley.
Thank you.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, sponsoring a lung cancer and smoking cessation symposium on Friday, September 22nd, at the Center for Health Education and Research in Morehead, and a fall pharmacy forum on Saturday, September 23rd, at Carter Cave State Resort Park. Continuing education credits are available. Agendas, registration, and more information online at neahec.org/conferences.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm a tired Rick Phillips.
I'm Shelley Irving.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. And unfortunately, I got bit by chiggers.
And we got bit by Tony.
It has created a lot of tension in the studio.
I wish you quit scratching.
And it's this, Shelley came to my rescue. I will tell you, so what did I do? Like I said, the bleach bath, I couldn't see it, but I also, and we've talked that there are immature forms of the Lone Star tick that are also vigorous biters. And what happened was I was cleaning out a fence row on my farm, and I got into some tall grass and loose leaves, and so there I was. I got the chiggers, I got the ticks. These immature tick forms, they're in the western part of the state, they're called turkey mites. And if you Google search turkey mites, you can see all these hunters and farm people and so forth. What do I do? What do I do? I'm eating alive. This is what happens. If you take your sock off and your foot looks like someone sprinkled pepper all over it, except the pepper's moving, those are turkey mites.
Well, it's red pepper, too. It's not, right? I mean, aren't there...
Well, the turkey...
I guess the mites are
black. Yeah, so
right.
The immature Lone Star ticks are, in fact, little black dots that move. You can't tweeze them and all the stuff that we talk about mature ticks. You simply have to scrape them. And this is why I now have a different definition of Kentucky scratch-offs. In fact, that's what I've been doing all week. So I felt my foot was kind of burning, and I knew I was in trouble because I've been working on this fence row. And I pulled my sock off, put my foot over the bathtub, and just started scraping you know, 20 or 30 of these black ticks off. And I thought I got them, and I said, I'm okay. And I didn't think then about taking a shower. But again, chiggers and these immature tick forms, they tend to hang out together. So what happened was I got the reaction. I react pretty badly. I got the reaction to the ticks on my foot, and then I got the chiggers all over everywhere else because I didn't take the shower. So that's how the week went for me. And what I did, as I said, not much to do. I thought, well, okay, I'll try the bleach bath just in case there's any ticks left. That might help. It didn't, but I took it. All right, so this is our sponsor, the Fun Facts About Chiggers. We're at fun fact number 11, and we're going to finish these out this section. Bites tend to be concentrated around the knees, the elbows, the ankles, thighs, the armpits, and the diaper area along the borders of undergarments. These foul creatures have no sense of decency whatsoever. Fun fact number 12, they share habitats with ticks. Well, I found that out. Thank you very much. Tick inspection is recommended. Well, I did that. I didn't do the chigger part. Treatment consists of...
scratching.
Yep. Anti-itching medicines, and this would be mainly, well, it is. It's you can put some of the stuff on them that has menthol or phenol. It's an alcohol. It evaporates. It feels a little bit good. It'll stop things for a minute. I use Solarcaine or one of the anesthetic sprays, and that feels pretty good, again, for a short period of time. Antihistamines, been using loratadine, which is
Claritin,
thanks. And that's a long-acting antihistamine. Not the best. Probably diphenhydramine or Benadryl's the best, but it makes you drowsy. And you can't have that on a radio show with Rick. You never know what's going to happen. Topical steroids, this would be, again, the Cordate or hydrocortisone cream, which doesn't really help a lot. What I did was it got bad enough that I just sort of defaulted to poison ivy treatment. I am on prednisone by mouth. And will be for a few days, and they'll quit. Oatmeal baths, highly recommended, says these guys. Nothing about the anti-lice shampoos, nothing about bleach baths, but oatmeal baths just to make you feel good. Antibiotics, if you scratch them to the point where they get infected, so that's probably next for me because I've scratched them so much. Fun fact number 14, after being exposed, you can minimize the rash by taking a hot, soapy shower or bath. Boy, I wish I had. Wash the clothes with soap and water. Recommended immediately after exposure, at least within the first 3 to 6 hours, because if you don't do that, pretty much the chiggers have bitten and it's done. And here is some golden advice from this book of tropical medicine, the only place I could find anything on the chiggers. It says, once the rash is present, scratching should be avoided.
How's that worked out for you?
Operative word there is should.
Well, yeah, I used the tropical disease book to get some of the places I couldn't get.
So you sort of accidentally found that page while scratching.
Yeah, I did. They do mention, fun fact number 15, wear protective clothing and soak your socks and trouser legs with insect repellents. And that's usually what I do is I'll really hit them hard with DEET. Permethrin also. Permethrin doesn't wash out quite as fast. You can treat with permethrin and it'll last.
Did you do that this time or were you in a bit of a hurry, were you?
I was in a bit of a hurry. Yeah, I you know,
this
I,
isn't like you, Tony.
I mean, know.
Really, truthfully, I've known you for years,
you know,
and you're usually very prepared.
This was really odd. If you remember back to the early part of August, it was very unsummer here. It was very pleasant and cool, and you know, it just didn't feel like it would. Ticks and chiggers, they wouldn't bother you in a nice day like this. It was low humidity and everything.
But they were enjoying the day too.
See, apparently. I was doing fall, and they were doing summer, and they won.
Well, and they had a festival.
Yeah. you wonder, I heard this little band playing down on my foot, but I didn't really think anything of it.
Oh, yeah.
It was a tick party and a chigger party. It was. So I've been bitten by a chigger.
I've had a chigger bite, too.
We've all been bitten by chiggers.
And there's nothing we can do.
That's right. There is no treatment for chigger bites.
There's no treatment for a lot of things, Tony. Most of them over on your side of the...
Just to hear you sing. I mean, this is good.
It's like listening to you laugh.
This is going to be a standard. We've got to have a song. It's the song of the week on Health Matters.
So you know what, Tony? We've managed to survive for 15 years by not singing.
Parkinson's disease. I got to talk about Parkinson's disease, and I can't laugh
can't
about
even
it.
Talk.
No, I can't. Parkinson's disease is a chronic progressive disorder of the central nervous system. And again, this is a group of conditions. They're motor system disorders, and they have to do with control of the muscle. That is, the strength is there, but they're not able to control it. There's two things that happen. You can get some movements, a tremor where the hand is shaking, or some other eccentric movements of the arms, particularly. Or the other thing is they get very stiff. And you've all seen that the stiff person walk where the arms don't move, and a person shuffles their feet along that shuffling gait that they get from that. It's called a festinating gait. It's the way we learned it in medical school. This is a tough condition. Happens a lot to elderly people. This is what intrigued me about it. It's all the way back to July 5th, and this was in the Mayo Clinic proceedings. People with Parkinson's disease should be monitored for melanoma and vice versa. This is what they did. Now, this was looking at the Mayo Clinic has these marvelous records. They take care of everyone in Olmsted County where the clinic is located, and they keep records on them for decades. And these are top world-class scientists. And so they review these records, and they find associations that you wouldn't know happen. So this was it's actually an ophthalmologist at the Mayo Clinic looked at their records database. He identified all of the Parkinson's cases from 1976 through 2013. So what are we looking at? Almost 40 years there of Parkinson's cases. They had to be seen by a neurologist because he didn't want anybody just that was kind of tentatively diagnosed. Then they looked at melanoma. They had 974 patients from Olmsted County who had Parkinson's disease in that 40-year period. Then he looked at their rates of melanoma compared with about 3,000 who didn't have Parkinson's. They also went back and did the other thing. They found 1,500 cases of melanoma, and they determined the 35-year risk of Parkinson's disease in the people who had the melanomas. People with Parkinson's disease were four times more likely to have had melanoma than those without Parkinson's. People with melanoma had four times the risk of Parkinson's.
Interesting.
Very. I do not know why this happened.
And
in your defense, you don't know a lot of things.
Mr. Negativity over there.
No, just pointing out some, interesting.
Brian, turn his mic off. Just turn the mic off.
I saw you getting calm over there, and I wanted to make sure you didn't get too calm.
I didn't fall asleep.
Yeah. The thing is, you start thinking, okay, what's the link here? Does sun exposure cause Parkinson's? No. Now, we know that certain insecticides cause Parkinson's. A farmer might spray insecticides and be out in the sun. That's a bit of a stretch, but it is a connection.
Yeah, because that doesn't usually happen in your neighborhood.
No.
Well, and you said this was an ophthalmologist, so is this melanoma of the eye?
Well, he was interested. I think he got interested, but it was any type of melanoma, any type of skin melanoma. And so if you or someone you love is diagnosed with a skin melanoma and is fortunate enough that it is cured and it does not result in their demise, then according to him, their risk of Parkinson's goes up. It's not a sure thing, but four times the rate of the other people who were not diagnosed with melanoma. And likewise then, if you have a loved one who's diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, you've got to watch out for skin lesions for melanoma. And there are melanomas of the eye. And again, he was working as a ophthalmologist. I think that's where he probably discovered the link. He started seeing these things, but then he checked all melanomas. And so it's not specifically eye melanomas that would be linked. So something else to worry about. He says, all right, so from a research standpoint, obviously, we need to find the common genes, the common immune responses. Because melanoma, one of the things that happens, it's a condition that affects people who are have their immune system suppressed. People with inflammatory diseases or people who get transplants have a higher risk of melanoma. So maybe there's something about your immune surveillance, and that then leads to melanoma and to Parkinson's disease. Or maybe there is a gene there, some abnormal gene that does not control the melanoma and also leads to Parkinson's. So just thought I would mention it. Like I said, something else to worry about. Speaking of cancers, this was a research letter published in the AMA Journal of Oncology. It came out of Duke University, but we still think it might be important anyway. Some cancer patients, even those with insurance, may spend a third of their household income on out-of-pocket health care costs outside of insurance premiums.
So I believe it.
buy your insurance, and you know that's expensive, but still there are other things. There are, on the average, it's about 11% of income and out-of-pocket expenses. 11% is a lot of.
That's a lot
of household income. This guy's name is Yusuf Safar. He says, doctors need to talk with patients about the cost of their treatment. Well, yeah, they do, because if you have cancer, it is going to we always say treatment has a side effect of thinning of the wallet. It has such an effect.
Tony, was there an age group on that?
They did not specify the age. This was a summary of it.
It makes you wonder, the AMA Journal. If it's an average of 11, you know, if you think about that, 11%.
Yeah.
If that includes the 20-somethings who have almost no percentage, then the 40-somethings, the boomers, you know, it's probably an enormous amount.
Well, here's what they said. Unexpected burden was associated with being younger, being unmarried, being non-white, unemployed, not retired, lower household income, higher cost. Colorectal or breast cancer turns out to be one of the higher ones. And the reason is that we push the 5-year survival up with those to 69-89% for breast cancer. And so they're going to be around for a while, and they're going to have – we can't cure it, but we can really extend survival. But that means a lot of chemotherapy. And then lower quality of life, higher financial distress in the first place. So this obviously is going to affect poor people disproportionately.
Right.
But you're right, the total cost, when you're talking about 30% income for somebody at the high point of their earning potential, that is a lot of money. And these drugs, some of these drugs are $100,000 or more a year for cancer treatments. And so there is not really anyone you can say, you have enough money that no matter what happens to you, we can clean you out with an illness no matter how wealthy you are. I truly believe that. A lot more could be done. It's unfair for a patient who's facing a catastrophic illness to sit on the phone with their insurance company, find out what's covered and what's not covered. As a matter of fact, I will tell you a story. I will not tell you the hospital, but I will tell you Shelley and I interviewed applicants for the PA program this past week. And one of the applicants told me she worked in a doctor's office, and they had diagnosed. They felt that they had diagnosed a cancer. They needed to get a CAT scan and be sure. And the CAT scan would not be done unless the patient had $200 up front, and the patient didn't have $200. So sort of we go back to the dog scan. We think you have cancer. It will take $200 to be sure, and if you don't have $200, go home and get it because we're not going to do that.
Man.
Well, how is that ethical?
Yeah, well, it wasn't, and so her doctor, to his credit, talked to a few people, similar to the way I talked to Rick when he attempts to get uppity.
And I don't attempt. I absolutely do.
You get uppity. But at any rate, he was able to change that. But this is the kind of healthcare system we live in. We bleed people with cancer till they lose a third of their disposable income. We withhold necessary tests from people for money. This is the system that we've developed. This is the best system. This did not happen in post-war era. This was something that happened to this young woman under the Affordable Care Act. It is tragic. I always wind down. Isn't that frustrating?
For who?
You folks at home are celebrating. Why don't you start up the chigger bands, because we're about to have a big party when the Health Matters is over. However, all right, I can at least salvage a little bit of this. I got a little bit of time left, and I want to talk with you some about this. This was the BMJ. Remember, it used to be the British Medical Journal, but like KFC, it's now the BMJ. I don't know why. July 26th. This was looking at e-cigarette use in the United States. It started around 2010, was really popular by 2014. And they looked at their smoking cessation rates, and they did a survey. They looked at surveys that were done over a 10-year period, 20,000 to 40,000 respondents. And it turns out that after e-cigarettes, were people who used e-cigarettes within the past year were more likely than non-users to attempt to quit smoking, 65 versus 40%, and succeed, 8 versus 5%. Now, first of all, obviously, a lot of people attempt and don't succeed.
Right.
But the other thing is a lot of people are able to quit smoking cigarettes with e-cigarettes. The problem is they're smoking the e-cigarettes instead, and so it's not a true quit. Another thing that we disagree with the Europeans about, but this was published just to say, well, e-cigarettes may have some role. In the U.S. right now, we do not think that they have any role in smoking cessation because you're still on an e-cigarette. But more about that in future programs, I'm sure. For this program, our time is up. I need to go scratch myself, and Rick needs to get us off the air.
Special thanks to our Morehead State Public Radio producer, Brian Courtney, and to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. Listen to the show, go to WMKY.org, or visit us on Facebook. Just do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening. And remember,
Health Matters is used with a proper diet and exercise program and possibly with other radio shows to control high blood sugar. Nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, weakness, or a metallic taste in the mouth may occur.
Health Matters can rarely cause a serious, sometimes fatal condition called lactic acidosis. Stop listening to Health Matters and get medical help right away if you develop any of the following symptoms of lactic acidosis: unusual tiredness, dizziness, severe drowsiness, chills, cold skin, muscle pain, slow heartbeat, or stomach pain with nausea, vomiting, or diarrhea.
Did you say itching? Did you mention itching?
And itching.
Read the patient information leaflet if available from your pharmacist before you start listening to our show, and each time there is a break. If you have any questions, consult your doctor or pharmacist.
Tell your doctor immediately if any of these conditions occur or if you notice a big change or itching in your overall health. You may need to stop listening to our show temporarily. The elderly are also at higher risk, especially those older than 80 years who have not had kidney tests.
Whatever you do, do not take Health Matters lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, avoid chiggers at all costs, and tune in next week for more exciting news from the world of medical research on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, sponsoring a lung cancer and smoking cessation symposium on Friday, September 22nd, and a pharmacy forum on Saturday, September 23rd. Agendas, registration, and more information online at neahec.org/conferences.